Good.
Good.
So where are you calling from?
Salt Lake City.
This is the weekly newspaper?
That's right.
Okay.
I wonder if you have some time to talk right now.
Sure.
Great. Basically, my story is just kind of a riff on the 666 festivities. But kind of in talking to not some of the locals, just one local, I guess. Storm. Do you know Storm?
Oh, boy.
Attitude Tattoos.
Okay, Art on You Studios?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He's just kind of piqued my interest into kind of some of the underpinnings of Satanism. So it's kind of going to be some of both. Just looking at you know how Satanists may be misunderstood, as well as kind of the novelty of this upcoming date.
Did you say how Satanists are misunderstood?
Yeah, perhaps.
Okay.
But let me ask you if you could just tell me briefly about Radio Free Satan.
Oh, boy, what'd you want to know about it? It's been around for 6 years. It started June 6th, 2000. Mm-hmm. And it's basically really does represent, I guess, you could say Satanism, because it's so eclectic. It's very much I was asked this, what we play on the station, and it's really whatever that individual DJ likes. Mm-hmm. So it's very much about individual tastes. You might hear jazz on it at one moment and death metal the next. A lot of times people expect to hear death metal or black metal and all heavy metal, and which that my personal preference is metal. There's plenty of DJs on there that just do not like metal.
Gotcha. And you launched the station.
Pardon me?
You launched this station?
Yes.
Personally? Okay. And where does it broadcast?
All over the world.
All over the world?
Absolutely. It's an internet radio station, and which is really more powerful than satellite radio. The satellite radio has a multi-million-dollar marketing budget that would make you believe that they're the be-all, end-all to radio. But really, internet radio is where it's at. Especially with the advent of podcasting, we truly can go all around the world in the matter of seconds. And literally, those podcasting files can be sent all over the world in seconds.
And do you have any type of gauge of what your listenership.
Sure. We have tens of thousands of listeners each week that tune in to the stream as well as podcasts, depending on the DJ. Some DJs are not as popular as others, but really they don't go for popularity. They go for, again, this is where the satanic personality comes in. They go to please themselves. It's mm-hmm. They go to please themselves with the radio show. They're not really out to necessarily please the listener.
Gotcha.
That might be the odd thing about our radio station is each individual DJ is there to please themselves first. Mm-hmm. Listener comes second. And most radio stations would say, what do the listeners want to hear? And I don't really think any of our DJs would ever say that. It's more, what do I want to hear? What do I want to play?
And if you could, I mean, I've read your online biography that apparently your wife put together. Am I correct at evilnow.com?
I think so. There's, you know, I don't know which one you've read, but there's quite a few out there. There's something even on Wikipedia I saw.
Just give me a rundown of your background. You know, where Ooh. You come from, and where you, and if you could give me. You know, explain to me your relationship with Satan, how that came to pass.
Wow. Well, I've got a 20-plus year career, so it's hard to sum up in a soundbite or something quotable. But I really, I'm like a caveman when it comes down to it. I'm the purest form of what goes on with this stuff. I really started from being a runaway and living in my car and really it came from the need of wanting, my need to express myself and communicate to others, and really wanting to express myself and find alternatives to expressing my emotions, whether it was pain or joy. Most of my people, and when I say my people, it's when people ask me what my nationality is, I say metalhead. My family's of plumber stock. They're plumbers, they're pipe fitters. And what they did to get their joy or express their joy or their pain was to drink. And a lot of my people, the blue collar people, at the they work 5 days, they trade 5 days for 2 days, and then on those 2 days they go to the bar and drink. Maybe they'll barbecue if it's a nice day out, but that's really what they do. And when I grew up, my father and mother, you know, it wasn't the greatest relationship, and I didn't want to live that life. I ran away from home, and I did a zine. Do you know what a zine is?
I do, but yesterday I called it a zine, and everyone yelled at me.
Well, whatever. People do call it zines. It's right. But tomato, tomato, right?
That's it.
But I started to do a zine, and I really thought, well, I started to do flyers, and it was for anti-censorship, which is my political fetish, was when I started to express myself at a young age, I noticed people would tell me I couldn't do that, and it really got me angry. That I couldn't say what I wanted to say. People would say that. Teachers, authority figures would say, you can't say that. And it made no sense to me. And so my political fetish was censorship issues. And when the PMRC started to form, I really got active and started to put together flyers and petitions. And I had a friend that was for legalizing marijuana. So I said, hey, let's staple your flyer to mine. We'll save some money. You can print on the other side of my flyer. And it started where we started stapling flyers together, and it became like a magazine. Mm-hmm. And that's where I started. And, you know, then I'm still doing that to this day in some twisted form or another, is trying to communicate and express myself. Gotcha. My relationship with Satanism mm-hmm. is an odd one. For sure. I started dating my wife, and at the same time I was doing the Milwaukee Metal Fest, and I was researching what was a Nazi, because everyone would tell me Nazis are bad, and I was like, well, why? You know, I didn't just listen to the history books. I wanted to talk to Nazis and understand their belief system and see what was so wrong with it. Mm-hmm. And so I was interviewing this skinhead out of Canada. His name was George Hawthorne, and he sent me the book Might is Right, and he said, this is the Nazi Bible. He didn't say Nazi, but white supremacist, whatever the name they were going, nationalist, social net, whatever the label they had put on themselves. And Amy at the same time had handed me the Satanic Bible, and I told her I'd sold hundreds of copies of the Satanic Bible and never read it. Mm-hmm. I sold it because I was a went to Catholic school, so anything with an upside-down cross or a Baphomet or a devil on it, I would sell out of these galleries that I had owned at the time. And is this too long form for you?
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Okay.
I've got all day.
Okay. Okay. So she gave it to me. I started reading both books at one time, and I noticed that they were the same book. Mm-hmm. And the Nazi guy said, you should really republish this Might is Right. It's not been in print for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And as I publish books, one of the things I do. And so I thought about it seriously, and I said, wow, I could really market this at Satanist. Because Anton LaVey did the Satanic Bible, a good half of it is inspired by Might is Right. He edited out the racist parts, the illogical rhetoric, and took the real powerful chunks from Might is Right and put it into the Satanic Bible. So my relationship with the Church of Satan and Satanism came there. My understanding when I read the Satanic Bible at that point was like, wow, I do all this already. You know, I do. I am the set. I take care of me first. It's really a me religion. You know, it's all about me. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how you can sum, I believe you can sum up Satanism, is it's about the individual, and they come first. Their needs, their wants, that comes before anything. And so when I read it, I was already like, you know, I've lived my whole life this way. And so I agreed with the philosophy wholeheartedly after I'd read the book. I don't agree with the ritual part of it, swinging swords, wearing capes, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But half of that satanic Bible I really liked. And it was the might is right half, the stuff with the racist stuff taken out and shit. So then I had seen Anton LaVey as a pop culture icon, okay? Mm-hmm. And so when I started to republish this Might is Right, I contacted him and I said, you know, this is I want to republish, I'm going to republish Might is Right. And I'm giving you the chance to explain your side of things. Because at that point, people would, online, you'd see a lot of, he plagiarized the Satanic Bible from Might is Right. He's a plagiarist that, you know, he didn't write anything. So I wanted him to be able to explain it. And he took me up on the offer. We worked out a deal. And I went to California. And at that time, I got to meet with Anton LaVey. And that's how my involvement with the COS, the Church of Satan, came into be. And it was a great, it was a cool meeting because I went in looking at him as a pop culture icon. And I left there with a realization that the guy really had his hustle on. He really knew how to read people. He was a really, he really lived life like people should. Like, in the last time I met someone, and this is really odd, and I don't mean to, because he, you know, he might take this as like I'm disrespecting him, and I'm not. But I really took, the last time I'd met someone so true, so honest, and so nice, and it's a hard word to put with Anton LaVey, right, was like when I met Deadheads. Because I had toured, like, I went to a couple Deadhead shows for a couple months, you know? And he was like that. He was really a nice person. He was really cool and very kind and very polite. You know, you'd imagine when you meet a Satanist or the head of the Church of Satan, he's going to be, hello, you know, really like this evil entity with this deep voice, and he's ready to strike you down at any time. And we sat in his kitchen and ate double stuffed Oreo cookies and instant coffee for 12 hours. And, you know, we just spoke about what was going on, you know, with Elvis or what have you. Mm-hmm. So it was really crazy when I left there. And understand, I left there and he made me a priest in the Church of Satan. And before that, I sent him $100, and I told him it was not for a membership. I said I would never join anything. I would never put a label on myself. So this $100 is so you'll read my proposal, my business proposal. It's not for a membership. And he had told me later he really enjoyed getting a letter like that because the COS is a movement. It's a full of non-joiners, mm-hmm. ultimately. You know, it's people like that. So I didn't realize that at the time mm-hmm. when I went there. I just sent him the $100 to motivate him to read my proposal because he's a celebrity, mm-hmm. you know. And that's what I've done with other celebrities. Like when I booked Motorhead, I sent Lemmy, you know, some World War II memorabilia, you know, worth a couple $100. So he would... take my proposal and move it to the top of the stack. Gotcha. You know, and that's what I did with LaVey. And that was my thing, and I told him then, and I don't really feel comfortable putting a label on myself at all. I have a religion of me. I have my own belief system. I take some of the Satanic Bible or that philosophy, the Church of Satan philosophy, and I use that, and I like it, and I agree with it. There's some stuff that I don't... necessarily need in my life, like the rituals and stuff. I think that's very hokey and you know, odd. Does that answer it?
Absolutely.
Sorry if I'm going long form, but I don't know how else to...
Now just tell me a little bit about this June 6, 2006 celebration. I mean, is this more just a novel observance or do you ascribe, you know, superstitious implications to it?
Well, I subscribe to the metalhead part of it. You know, I'm down with Iron Maiden and heavy metal. I think 666 represents heavy metal to me. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no superstitions. I don't have any superstitions when it comes to that stuff at all. I just think the little 16-year-old metalhead, you know, pot-smoking metalhead comes out in me, and I'm just like, all right, yeah, this is going to be fun. You know, that's about all it is to me.
Gotcha.
You know, there's, I don't, you know, it's a marketing date for me, as well as a publisher and an entrepreneur. I look at it as a way to get some added publicity for the books that I'm putting out. You know, I'm putting out on the 6th, I reissue Might is Right, and it has the Anton LaVey introduction that he did for me. And Peter Gilmore, the person that took over at the high priest position in the Church of Satan, he wrote the afterword. And so this is a new edition with Peter Gilmore's afterword, and that's, you know, a big deal.
How so is that a big deal?
Well, it's a big deal in the world of the Church of Satan, and it's a big deal because Peter Gilmore doesn't lend his name to projects that often. So it's a big deal. I mean, you know, he represents an international organization, the Church of Satan. He's the head. So it's a big deal when it comes to something like that, I guess.
Gotcha. And what about others? I mean, let's kind of talk about the wider implications. I mean, from the folks that I've talked to, this date is just you know, fun. This is going to be fun for a lot of people. But well, I guess is there anyone that you know of that's out there, you know, ascribing apocalyptic meaning to the 6th?
No one but the media that I've heard from. And I mean, I'm not trying to slant, you know, I've only heard that stuff from media people. I haven't seen it online. I guess there's, you know, I mean, but that's going to come from religious fanatics, just like, you know, the problem we have with people flying planes into buildings. It's the same, it's very similar. You know, you have religious fanatics, and they're going to use it as a marketing tool as well for, you know, when they start talking apocalyptic doom. That's basically what they preach on a daily basis to get donations and to keep people in line is fear. That's how the church is run, is through fear. That's something that's absent from, you know, the COS as well, as, you know, guilt and guilt for being a human being, guilt for acting like the animal that you are. Those are things that we don't, you know, we as Satanists, I guess, wouldn't have an issue with. And that's, I guess that just goes on a daily basis. I guess 666 is just a marketing tool for them as well, if that's what they're doing. I haven't heard of it.
Yeah,
and I think if anything apocalyptic happens, it'll be at the hand of some, you know, crazy religious fanatic that, you know, would fly a plane into a building, you know, this and blame it on the devil, you know, how the Muslims did or whatever, the fanatic religion that they were. They did that and blamed it on us, or blamed it on, you know, America. You know, it's, I don't know.
Now I understand that the show is sold out, right?
What, in L.A.?
Yeah, in L.A.
No, not mine.
Oh, okay.
666 Eve is not sold out.
Gotcha.
And even if it sells out, I can promise you, I'll be out front scalping tickets for double the price. I always have a ticket for the person willing to pay a premium.
How many tickets have you sold, and how many do you expect to? I mean, how large is this venue?
It's only 500 people. We're doing a small gathering, so 500 people.
And there are other events in L.A. that night as well?
Oh, yeah. My event is on June 5th. It's the Monday before the 6th.
Gotcha.
And I'm doing the eve of 666, you know, ringing it in like the New Year's Eve celebration. And our event was so popular that it inspired Art on You Studios to do the one in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask him about that, he'll tell you. I mean, he's at least put that in MySpace bulletins, how the Radio Free Satan event has inspired him to do his own.
Yeah, that's essentially what he told me as well.
And we've inspired about 15 of them, as a matter of fact, because the 666 date, I guess it's more exciting to do the Eve, count it in, have a good time, count it in, and then go have your good day on your own on the 6th. But so there's one in Australia going, there's one in the UK, there's two in Florida, there's one in Texas. So we've inspired a bunch of them, which is the thing I'm very proud of.
And now, from what I understand, and you might have to give me a little history lesson here. From what I understand, the Church of Satan members and adherents don't believe that Satan is some literal dark agent angel, but it's more of a folkloric embodiment of you know, human animal nature. Am I wrong there?
You're not wrong there. I'm not sure what anyone's take on the word Satan is. It's a word to me, and it really, yeah, there is no, we do, I, and I don't, you know, the Church of Satan does not believe in an entity of Satan. Mm-hmm. There is no ghosts, boogeyman, spirits after you die. There's nothing like that. You just turn to dust. That's it. Your energy dissipates. It's gone. You know, mm-hmm. There's no heaven or hell.
Gotcha. And is that also the case for wasn't there kind of a splinter group back sometime, the Temple of Set?
You know, I have no idea what the Temple of Set's about, because I'm just you know, I'm a simple person, I guess. I'm just not, I don't understand anything about that. I you know, I have no idea. You can check out their website. I wish I did to answer the question, but I don't.
Now, you kind of touched on this earlier, but you know, United States, 90% Christian nation, supposedly, and in that so-called Satanists get something of a bad rap. Tell me what you think of that, and why you think that is.
What do I think of what?
The fact, I guess the fact that Satanists, you know, this notion of Satanists as perhaps portrayed on Oprah or Geraldo, as, you know, going into the woods, you know, gothic kids going into the woods to cut up house pets.
Well, it's just misinformation. You know, I mean, that's just crazy talk. I don't know. I mean, that's, people get a lot of their ideas from TV and movies, and that's where it stops for them. There's a lot, what it says to me is there's just a lot of stupid people in the world. You know, there's a lot of, this is, and it's a sad, when I look at a movement or a philosophy like Satanism, it, you know, I look at it, and I when I told you earlier about my people, plumbers, the stock that I come from, I really feel for my mom, let's say. My mom, I really love my mom, and she lives a Christian life, and I feel really sad for her that, you know, this is a slave nation. She's been beaten down so bad in her life that she really feels bad about getting her nails done or going for a spa or treating herself good. She thinks she should be saving her money for old age, and I just can't help but think, what if you get hit by a truck tomorrow? You know, I mean, you have to live your life and have a good time with it. And she's so guilt-ridden, and she has these blinders on, and that's what 90% of those people are doing. They you know, they're cattle, they're cows, they're sheep or whatever. They just chomp at the grain, and they head into the slaughterhouse, and you know, that's what we do. That's what they do. I mean, I live in a small town right now. I'm from the city, and I moved into town, and I started up my own soda business. Mm-hmm. And I sold 500,000 sodas in 4 weeks, the most anyone had ever seen in the soda business from one guy. Mm-hmm. And to me, that represent, and there was a lot of fear from people right away. Who is this guy? When they ran my name on the internet, they found out I have ties to all this true crime memorabilia and all this weird stuff that they don't understand. And they want to make me this this bad guy. Mm-hmm. But I go out and grow basil and tomatoes in my backyard and make pesto sauce. I'm not out in the woods slaughtering animals. And I think because they're going to work 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day, chomping at the bit, and I'm able to move into town and do something that is special, you know. I think that a lot of times that will help with the demonization of a Satanist, because most Satanists are overachievers. When you look into people that do this, they are the Marilyn Mansons of the world. They are the filmmakers that, I mean, look, you know, The Omen. I don't know. Most of these people are overachievers. The kids that are wearing capes and makeups and swinging swords and going into the woods are, you know, they have problems, emotional problems. And if they didn't latch on to Satan, they'd latch on to professional wrestling or something else, video games. They'd have problems somewhere, you know. I don't know. I mean, that atheist, I know, living in Minnesota now, I know there was a big report done that most people will not trust an atheist. And I thought that was really funny how atheists are the minority of the country. And this survey was done where it was like included blacks, Hispanics, Jewish folks, and an atheist. And atheists were discounted. You can't trust them. They wouldn't get near them. I don't know why that is. I mean, I think it's just it works to the man's advantage to have everyone in fear. That way you keep, you know, working your job. And what does it all mean at the end when you're in a hospital bed dying of cancer and you look back at your life and as you say, 90% of the people are doing that. Well, 90% of their life was spent serving other people besides themselves. And then they're in their you know, cancer-ridden state in a deathbed, and 90% of their life went to, like you're typing away. I mean, you're a writer at least. You need some creativity with your job. But imagine all the folks that are sewing ends on socks and making your sandwich at Subway. I mean, where do they find joy in their life?
Let me ask you said something about you had a little soda pop enterprise after it got out that you were hawking true crime memorabilia. I mean, did that come to a halt, or how'd that
No.
enterprise work out for you?
I mean, I sell soda. It's just gonna sell more soda.
What kind of soda is it? I mean, what's the hook?
It's blueberry.
Yeah.
It's just a blueberry soda. You know, I'm not an advocate of beer making, you know, necessarily drinking beer all the time. So it was just something that I wanted to do when I was a child. And since I moved out of the big city and true crime stuff isn't going to sell in a small town, I was just looking at something I wanted to do since I was a kid. So I started concocting a gourmet soda pop, and it took off. I mean, how's it work? Some people don't talk to me in town. That's how it works, but that doesn't really bother me because I don't talk to people, some people either. So, I mean, it's not going to affect my business.
So it is a thriving business, then, the soda pop.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Okay. What's it called?
My soda pop?
Yeah.
Ely Elixir.
Ely.
Yeah.
I just like the idea of the satanic soda pop maker.
Well, I'm not. I don't really label myself as satanic. I'm an atheist for sure. Because I work with and see, take some of the satanic philosophy and look at it and think it's logical doesn't make me necessarily a Satanist. You know. I'm definitely an atheist just out of logic. I mean, oh, I heard this great stand-up comedian. Have you ever heard of Doug Stanhope?
I don't think so.
Well, you know, when I did my research about religion and being an atheist and stuff, I found out that most really, really wealthy people, like the people that run the world and run the factories and run the newspapers that you're working for, they're not religious. Out of logic, they may play that on TV and they may say they are to help out keep people in line, but they're not. And there's this whole there's a most the smarter people, the scientists of the world, the people who do create a longevity for human beings, the people who have put men on the moon, they're not religious people. The smartest of the smart people are not religious. And that's from me reading when I'm 16, 17 years old on the streets, just reading up on it and looking. And that's where a lot of this stuff started. And, you know, there are some scientists, and they're the odd man out, that are religious, but most of them are not. I mean, they are not. And then when you look into the history of what religion has taken away and what science has given, you might even get mad at religion and be angry at it, because it's not really anything that does anything for anyone. Logically, I mean, it might do something for you in a, like a lucky rabbit foot kind of way. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's just not. This Doug Stanhope, that's what I was going to say, this comedian's, they're, and a lot of them are not really religious people because they deal in the logical world. Doug Stanhope was, I just heard this thing, we put on the radio, Free Satan, free CD that we're giving out on June 5th. And it starts off, and entitled, it's on Stand Up Records, if you wanted to check this out. And it's entitled Fuck Your God. And it's really funny, and he talks about how most people, if they didn't have the Bible beaten into their skull as children, when he says something like, when your heads are soft, no one would pick up that book as an adult and say, hey, this makes a lot of sense. You know, there's a boogeyman under my bed. There's a bunny rabbit in my closet. And he equates it to all those things. And it's just a really funny take on the whole thing. I don't know.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
Are you religious?
Not at all, in fact.
And that's got to be, is that something you have to keep undercover because you're in Salt Lake City?
Oh, not really. Actually, Salt Lake City is kind of the only enclave in the state. There maybe with a couple of other exceptions where it does go about 50-50 between the, you know, people who are nominally associated with the church at least and those who aren't. So it's definitely not like you know, wearing a scarlet letter by any means, but it is just a little annoying when, you know, the ebbs and flows of the legislature and other government bodies are intimately tied to, you know, the church.
That murders me. And that's you know, murders me, that the whole political thing, how we're supposed to have the separation of church and state, and yet every politician has to have a hold of Bible in their hands to get some votes. It's just murder to me. Ugh. It's an absolute nightmare. And it's funny because, you know, our forefathers also, they were not religious. They were atheists. They were in the truest sense of the word, satanic. You know, they were, you know, and that's our forefathers. That's why they, you know, whatever. You know.
I got you. Let me ask you, give me an idea, explain to me the fascination with serial killers and mass murderers and memorabilia thereof, and tell me a little bit about, apparently you also have a book.
Yeah, True Crime Warped Minds, Book 1. I also have a DVD and an audio CD as well. And they're called True Crime Warped Minds Audio Volume 1, True Crime Warped Minds DVD Volume 1.
let me just ask you, how's that sold for you, and when did that come out?
They sell great. I mean, I put one out last October, the DVD and the audio. And I just put out the True Crime Warped Minds book, and our big premiere is the June 5th thing in L.A., but they sell great. I mean, are you asking about the fascination for me or for the general public that buys my book?
Both, actually.
For me, it was just something like I grew up and my first boogeyman was Gacy. So I rode my bike to his house and watched them excavate the bodies. And I heard stories there. You'd hear the media talk. You know, as a little kid, I'm on my bike, and I'd hear the media say things, and I'd hear the cops say things to them, and I'd hear the workers that were digging say things, what that was found. But you'd never read about it in the newspaper. It was sanitized, and so I started writing Gacy at a young age, and it was just a, it was, that was part of it. As I grew up, I understood that part of me related to the media's perception that most serial killers are abused, beaten by their parents, have alcoholic fathers, you know, a whore for mother. So I related to some of that stuff personally. So my whole thing was research into that mind to see what part of it was the hypocrisy or the missing information, and part of it was that. My fascination with it now is the, I gave up on it. Jeez, I didn't care. I haven't cared about true crime and serial killers for like 5 years until it became such big business. Where it was on every TV, you know, we have court TV, we have A&E running Bill Curtis serial killer specials every night. We have CSI, three CSIs on CBS. And I was fascinated by that and how it was amazing to me how sexy they made it. And I know that sounds odd, but I watched the BTK thing, and they made it sexy and almost sympathetic to him. Like, oh, he gave one of his victims a cigarette. Now, I had read the police report the night before that CBS made for TV show came out, and he gave his victim a cigarette and made her puff it so he could put it out on her cheek. And if she didn't, he'd break one of her fingers. And as he's raping her, and there's nothing sexy about that. You know, even in the wildest fantasies of domination, when people have sexual fantasies, I don't really find anything sexy about that. And I think CBS and shows that really make it vanilla and make it sexy, they, you know, they put all these serial killing crime things on there because there's this sexuality to them. You know, because there's, you know, rape or torture, there's some sort of, you know, sex going on with a lot of these crimes. But they take out all the stuff that would take out the sexual energy. You know, when you talk about what I'm saying and you describe it in graphic detail, it's really heinous. And I think they plant more seeds in demented people's minds than they educate. You know, I don't really think they do any service. So my books and what I'm doing is filling in those gaps of the really heinous, gross parts of the stuff, the really the facts. The stuff that belongs in a more a monster movie, a Stephen King or a Clive Barker, those people would tackle those subjects. And it's a shame that, you know, the horror genre would take that stuff, like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, how horrific that was. That's based on Ed Gein and real facts. And you know, you can only find in true crime, you can only find the true story in horror movies, you know. And so that even makes it seem like fantasy. I don't know. And I think the public's fascination with this stuff is sexual. Most of the people I meet that buy the books are, a lot of them are sexually repressed. They have some guilt over their fantasy life, and they live it through these pictures that are painted by Bill Curtis. She was tied up in the back seat of the car. You know, and he doesn't. There's, you know what I mean? There's. That's
So,
just the
really, you're almost putting the lie to the kind of, I mean, I guess, what's the word, that this stuff is sensationalized, eroticized.
I'm putting the what to it?
Putting the lie to it, that you're kind of debunking the fact that this should be romanticized, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sickened by, I mean, that's really what brought me out of true crime retirement, let's say, is I couldn't handle seeing one more show where they painted these characters. And it's funny, ABC has a formula. What true crime they show is always the man who kills his wife or strikes his mate, beats them down, and it's always like when they put it out there, and this stuff you can't do in court, but they make the women seem like, eh, she deserved it. It's really close to that line. I mean, they don't obviously don't do that as basic as I'm saying it. But when you watch it, you start to think in your mind, well, hey, she was cheating on him. And then they show the picture of her, you know, with a shotgun blaster laying in the pool of blood, and but she was having an affair with three black men, you know? And it's just like, I'm blowing my mind when I see this stuff. I'm like, oh, I guess she deserved it, the slut, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not actually saying that, you know, but it seems like that's where they're going with some of that stuff. ABC is really like the anti-woman true crime network. It's sort of funny. And CBS is very sexy. They're always with the rape and the torture, but they don't really talk about the torture. They have a very gray thing with the CSI. Is, you know, have you watched CSI? Mm-hmm. Very sexy show. Mm-hmm. Am I wrong?
Yeah, absolutely not. I was actually for a time hooked to CSI. Hooked on CSI.
Right, right. My father. What?
It is very sexy. Yes.
My father-in-law watches. I never watched it before, and I go up because, you know, we're taking care of him. He had a stroke, so we come up. That's why we're up in the small town, too, to come up and take care of my father-in-law. And I'm watching. He's in the hospital. Amy turns it on. I'm watching. I'm like, man, this is hot. And I should feel bad about saying that. You know, and I mean, they're talking about swabbing someone's cooch or whatever, and I'm just like, this is crazy. This is just nuts. And so, yeah, I think when the Walt Disney Network, ABC, when Mickey Mouse is putting true crime on as something that's sexy or something, you know, there's something very, very wrong about this. And maybe in a commercial sense you can say primetime TV can't get into those gross parts. Well, okay. But when you have questions about it and you go to the source like a courttv.com, like thecrimelibrary.com, there's no facts in there. You can find it on skcentral.com because it's an independent site. But when you go to cable and Bill Curtis is doing the same thing ABC is, and I mean, this is cable, so why can't he go a little further? You know, he doesn't. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's really, it's horrific. And, you know, I've had to deal with doing this victims' families. I've dealt with serial killers. I've dealt with state's attorneys. I've dealt with all of it. I am pro-death penalty. I think when these people are, if they're not going to be studied, they should be put to death pretty quick. I did a book with Gacy. I understood his whole psychology, how he masturbated every time he was on the news, how he really got off, literally, on the victims' families protesting him and talking about him. He got off on it. He talked about how he was like a carton of cigarettes to these people. He was taking their life from them slowly, and he enjoyed it. These people enjoy this stuff. I mean, Gacy used to pay guards to leave the room so when boys would come and visit him, you know, 18-year-old metalheads, he'd run around the room with his pants off and try to get at him. That's what he did in prison. You know, he had prison guys come by his cell to have sex with them, and he had frozen pizzas because he made so much money painting paintings. When I sold my first Gacy, okay, I started selling Gacy paintings, and when I got the first one, I hung it on my wall, and I'm looking at this thing, and I'm wondering, why do I own it? You know, what's creeping me out about it? You know, trying to get into it, trying to figure out what's the deal. And as it hung there for about a week, I finally figured it out that it wasn't because it necessarily was done by a serial killer. It was because it was done by a serial killer in a state prison, and it was approved by the state and my government to be sent to me. Mm-hmm. They counted in his art supplies, gave him the art supplies, let him paint it, counted out the painting, you know, sent it out with a receipt saying, here it is from Menard Prison. And I was just like, I can't believe this, you know. And at one point, I had one of the Gacy victims, one of the brothers of a victim, come in and visit me in a store where I was selling Gacy paintings. He quizzed me. I told him essentially the same thing, how, you know, it's horrible. It's, you know, I'm not for it. And he was surprised. And, he, you know, and I told him, you know, he had real issues with it. He was really upset. And I could see he was getting very upset. And I said, you know, your issues are with your politicians and and the warden of the prison that lets him paint. I don't think you should be able to paint. I don't think prisoners like that are in prison for violent crimes should be able to have rights, not even a TV. Mm-hmm. So I'm not for that stuff. And he lifted up his shirt and showed me a gun he brought to shoot me. Mm-hmm. And Oh, I just got away with that one. I know. So.
Wow. So you're touring. Are you touring to kind of pimp the book, or are you just happening to stop in Salt Lake City on your way to the 66 Eve?
Always pimping something. Pimping the book, yes. I'm touring to pimp the book, and it just happens to be I'm on Radio Free Satan. Me and my wife have this great podcast on crimeandcookies.com where she does a homemaking magazine, and she bakes cookies, and I do the true crime stuff. And so we have three podcasts on there. I do a crime cast, she does her cookie cast, and then we do the crime and cookies thing where we talk and about our daily life. And so we're hitting the road together to promote both of our books. And, you know, we're DJs on Radio Free Satan. They're throwing this big birthday party out there, you know, so it just all fit together. A nice.
Now your wife's a Hellraiser homemaker, is that right?
Yeah.
That's where she's moving. Is that going to be a recurring theme? Or
yes. Okay. She has a cookbook in the works. She has another issue already in the can. So, and it's very popular. In the competitive sense, I don't like it at all. Mm-hmm. More people are talking about it. More people are buying it. You know, and I don't like this at all. But it's cool at the same time. I'm happy for her.
I mean, the hit I get off of all of this is that you're more of a hedonist than anything, but that you know, that doesn't mean that you don't have a, you know, kind of an ingrained moral and ethical system as well.
Are you saying I'm not a hedonist? Why would you say that?
A hedonist in the sense that it, you know, life is about pleasure and getting what you can for you, but at the same time, you kind of draw the line when that would, you know, impinge on someone else doing the same.
Oh no, I'm okay with other people doing the same, mm-hmm. getting what they can.
You know, that's what I'm saying, but that while you're out getting yours, you're kind of the stopping point is when it would hurt someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't like to see people in pain necessarily unless they want it. You know, I don't like to see, you know, I don't like to, that stuff's gross. Serial killers are close to being a true form of animal. They're very primal, but you don't see squirrels running around trees, you know, butchering their squirrels, you know. I mean, if they're fighting, they're fighting. I think part of the serial killer problem, oh boy, you know who's, you know, this is funny. The serial killer stuff, and I would agree with you, yes, I'm a hedonist. I'm all for having fun every day like it's your last. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people to be hurt. But the serial killer thing, to add to it, you know who's closest to the mark on really coming up with a decent theory is the Unabomber. The Unabomber Manifesto, if people were to read that and take it seriously and read it, 80% of that is on the money. That's why it's included in my new book, The True Crime Warped Minds, Book 1. I have the whole thing he wrote, as well as other writings that didn't make it into the book. If you read those, he talks about the industrial age and technology really sort of destroying humanity, destroying us. And I, you know, I sort of agree with them, mm-hmm. as much as I like my computer, you know. I like email and stuff, but I see where he's going, and I see it more than ever now that I live in the middle of the forest. Mm-hmm. It's funny, when I moved up here, everything went down 50 notches. My anger, my everything went down a lot. And my brother had come up here, and he's really always on the hunt for girls, okay? He's really, like, almost desperate. Like, I got to go find a girl tonight. I got to go hook up. I got to go hang out at the bar and pick up a girl, okay? Mm-hmm. And when he came up here, he was like, wow, this is weird, man. I'm cool with just laying around and let's go to the fishing or whatever. He was like, why do you think that is? Well, you know, and I don't know, maybe the fresh air, not as much noise, you know. Check out the Unabomber Manifesto. You might.
Yeah, I read that a few years ago just out of morbid curiosity. And, yeah, I did find some of his thoughts to be, you know, fairly spot on in a real, what's the word, kind of in a, you know, ivory tower kind of way of looking at things.
Sure.
But, you know, it's great that you've kind of pinpointed that, but, you know, you're not going to stop the beast at this point. You know.
Though the beast will stop itself, I think our society's crumbling. It's on the verge of, you know, Rome.
it's like someone's drowning and he's describing the water, which is great because that accounts for it, but
yeah,
it doesn't necessarily.
I gave up. You know, it's sad, but I was political to the point where, when Bush was being, you know, elected the second time, I was actually in tears, crying. I was so emotionally drained. With politics, I just couldn't handle it anymore. And really, I just came to the conclusion that I can only do what I can do here. And if I live my life and in a way that I think is right and set some good examples for people, that's all I can do. You know, I can't really. You're right. I can't. I'm not going to go blow up buildings. I'm not going to go send pipe bombs to people that run factories. It's just not going to work. You're right. The beast is what it is. And if it, you know, the fact is that when you talk about all this Armageddon theories and 666, if that were the case, just imagine I've got a front row ticket. Okay, I'm in L.A. And all these events are sort of coming together in L.A., so it should be fun.
Have you been to BushIsAntichrist.com?
Bush is Antichrist? I've heard about that, like his name in Hebrew letters spells out 666, all that.
Yeah. Apparently they can. You can do the same thing with, who else was it? I think it was like with Jaleel White from Family Matters, you know, Urkel.
Right.
Or some, you know, it worked for basically anyone, but it, it was actually fun to read anyways. It's kind of cathartic.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Bush is a very satanic individual, as the definition goes. You know, he's definitely getting what's his, taking what he can while he's there. You know, he's really definitely taking advantage of the situation. And my hat's off to him for that. He's really done a job. You know, I look at him, he's laughing, I see these quotes, I'm with the haves and the have-mores. You got to love the guy. At the point of him being so honest and such an asshole, you know, he's the ultimate, you know, in Satanism, okay? Someone asked me, what's your attraction to Satanism before? And I was like, you know, it lets me be the asshole, you know, the group, the people. It really brings out, I can be the asshole that I am. And it's okay. There's no bullshit. You know, I can just be the asshole. And Bush is definitely the asshole that, you know, he's... whatever. I can't wait to see the next one when his brother's in office.
Yeah, wow. Knock it off.
Knock it off. You know that's true. They're just going to place him. It's like royalty at this point. We're going to forget what an election is. Come on, he stole it from Al Gore. You see Al Gore walking on the beach 50 pounds heavier with a big long beard. You know what that means. Someone came and said, we're going to kill your children in front of you if you open your mouth.
Yeah. Let me ask you just to kind of in a you know, a boilerplate statement, to just say why Satanism as you see it and as it's widely practiced by everyone that I'm talking to, has nothing to do with Satan. I mean, literally.
Why it has nothing to do with Satan?
Yeah, just not what the reason is for it. Just tell me how Satan has nothing to do with Satanism as you practice it and see it.
Well, it doesn't. I don't know how to phrase that any better than what you just did. It just it has everything to do with you. You know, you. You know, it's all about you, the individual that you are. It has nothing to do with anything else. If you want to make it about a Satan, then that's all on you. But, you know, Satanism has to do with you and you being responsible for you and you understanding you, you know, understanding, you know, you just because you are a Satanist doesn't make you royalty. It doesn't mean that you're going to ever be able to get anything any more out of life than working at Subway. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't mean that. It's all about you and being the best you that you can be. You know, it really, that's what it is. It's a person that strives to be the best they can. I mean, the word Satan is only used to freak out people that acknowledge the word Satan. You know, they if they acknowledge that deity as they, and those are the people, the same people that acknowledge Jesus Christ or acknowledge God in some form. So it's just meant to, really it's meant to scare those assholes away. Maybe I shouldn't say assholes, but it's meant to scare those fools. those fools away, you know, it's meant to keep them away. You know, and I like it for those reasons, because then I really don't have to get into a conversation about God with people if they understand that I'm somehow linked into the Church of Satan. It sort of scares them away, and it has this great, you know, it does, it has this great spooky presence with just the word, where the right people, you know, they don't show up at the party. You know, our party's going to be a good time. Why? Because we put that name on there, the right people are going to be there and the wrong people are going to stay far away. You know, so I don't know how to put it into words. Yeah, I'm not going to quote something that's on the Church of Satan website necessarily.
No, I think what you just said was perfect and okay. Was exactly what I was kind of angling for.
And the thing that, you know, I've always liked about, you know, when I went and met LaVey, and he's like, you know, I'm going to, you know, he's giving me this button and telling me how I can go out and represent the Church of Satan because I do. And I go, I don't know anything about it, dude. You know, that's what I'm saying to him. I go, I don't know anything about it. And he goes, but you do. You live your life like it. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you live your life. You live for you. You do all these things. You're accomplished. You're a good representation of that. And I was like, wow. And I'd ask him if I'd get a, you know, free meal out of it here or there. And he laughed, you know, because it really, you know, what is in it for me to go out and represent that stuff? Not, you know, I don't know. It's not much at that time I felt like doing, but over the years, I guess I'm losing track of my thought here, my train of my thought, but yeah, I've lost track of my thought. There you go.
No sweat.
I did have something really great and profound to say, but there you go. So it's down the toilet.
I think you've given me plenty, actually. I think this would be a fun article more than anything.
Yeah, and especially in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, and kind of on, you sent me an email asking if you could plug your visit to Red Room. We don't come out till Thursday, which is when you are visiting. What time are you visiting?
I'll be there from 4 p.m. until 9.
Gotcha.
And then we're heading over to some bar afterwards. But if you could plug it and tell them the Red Room will have our books and they're selling our stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I can, and I was just going to tell you, we don't officially come out till Thursday, but Wednesday we go out in, you know, somewhat smaller circulation and then full bore on Thursday. So I think it, you know, if people are picking up the paper, that, you know, the word will be out. So I just would.
Oh!
I was thinking that the first was Wednesday instead of Thursday.
I just remember my profound thought. Okay. It's not really profound. But over the years of being involved in this, I had so many dealings with people that were like, bigwigs in the Church of Satan, like, you know, the bigwigs. And I was able to say, hey, fuck you, take a walk, pal. You know, or, you know, Marilyn Manson, let's say, or the guy from Electric Hellfire Club. He's a big rock star, and I had a disagreement with him. Hey, fuck you, and I'm telling Amy, my wife, I'm like, uh-oh, you know, this means the Church of Satan's going to take all my links off their website. They have never done that. It's been beautiful that we can fight amongst each other like animals do, and I can be the asshole that I am, and I never have a... There's never any problem with not getting along with another Satanist or not getting along with someone in the Church of Satan. It's never a big deal. And I really enjoy that. That's what I enjoy. Most people you have business with, you know, if me and you have a problem, then next thing I know, 10 of your friends, the bar that you drink at won't let me drink there anymore. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got you.
It's not like that with the COS stuff, you know. You have a bitter feud with you, and your best friend will still talk to me. You know, that's, I guess, the equivalent. And I know that wasn't so profound, but that's what was on the tip of my tongue there. I had to spit it out.
Makes sense anyways. With that, Shane, I think I want to let you...